Certainly good to see everybody out this morning. Certainly glad for the opportunity to stand up here and talk to you about God's Word and bring a lesson out of God's Word. I'm going to look at some things this morning that I don't think are going to be very new to us. I don't think I'm going to say anything that you haven't heard before. However, maybe it can just bring some things to the front of our mind and help us to focus on some things this morning that may help us. First thing I want to look at this morning is the story of Job. And we're not going to go very in-depth into the story of Job because it is a rather lengthy book, a rather lengthy story, a lengthy lesson if you get into all that's there. But we do want to look at the high points before we move on to the rest of our lesson. First thing we want to notice about Job, if you turn to the very beginning of the book, we see in the first five verses, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their three sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of the feast had run their course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." This Job did continually. So a few things I want to notice here is, one, Job, it says, is a very righteous man. Says he's blameless and upright. He fears God. Next, we see that Job has quite a bit of stuff. It gives out a list there of all his livestock and how he has many servants. And, you know, that may not mean as much to us today because we don't all have a whole bunch of sheep and camels and donkeys and stuff running around, but it does say that he was the greatest of any man in the East. So we know he's got a lot of possessions, a whole lot of stuff up under him. So that's very important going forward in the story. The next thing we notice, and we're not going to read all of this, but from chapter 1 and verse 6 all the way through most of the second chapter, we see the devil, Satan, coming in and talking to God, and God offers up Job as an example and as a reference of what a good man should be to Satan. So we see, and again, I'm not going to read all this. I encourage you to go back and read it. I'm going to paraphrase over it. But we see that Satan comes up and God says, "I tell you what, you go ahead and do what you want to Job to try to get him to sin." Because if you remember, the first thing the devil said when God brought up Job is, "Well, the only reason he praises you, the only reason he does so much good is because you put a hedge around Job. You've given him all this good stuff. You've given him this great, you know, family, this great life, all these possessions. Of course he's praising you. But take all that away and he'll curse you." So God says, "Okay, everything he has is at your disposal. You do whatever you want to, Satan." So we're going to read now a little bit of what happens, starting in chapter 1, verse 13. "Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and there came a messenger to Job and said, 'The oxen were plowing and the donkeys were feeding beside them, and the Sabians fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you.' While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, 'The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone have escaped to tell you.' And while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, 'The Chaldeans formed these groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you.' And while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, 'Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and behold, a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. So all this stuff we just saw Job had in a few breaths from a few messengers, it's all gone. I think we forget that sometimes when we think about Job. We think about all the things he lost, but we forget how it all happened at once. Each one of these messengers came up, and then the next thing it says is while he was still speaking. So one bad news, one after the other. As humans, it's easy for us to get down. It's easy for us to just think things are piling on us. And it does. And Satan knows that, and he uses that right here with Job. Taking away everything is not bad enough. He wants to hit him hard all at once. And he does. Verse 20 in chapter 1, then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And in all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with his wrong. Job did not sin throughout this entire trial. I mean, if you read through the rest of the book, we see that. Job was a man who lost everything. I've lost stuff before. I've lost possessions. I've lost loved ones. I've never lost everything. I've never had all my loved ones gone. I've never had all my possessions stolen, slaughtered, and burned. But Job did. I want to go now to a very opposite story in the Bible, one that hits from a very different perspective. And that's if we look at King Solomon. If we go to 1 Kings chapter 3, 1 Kings chapter 3, we see right when Solomon is taking over the throne from his father David. A very well-known story. Chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord, and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask what I shall give you. And Solomon said, you have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart towards you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David, my father, although I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this your great people? And it pleased the Lord that Solomon asked this. And God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or all the lives of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been, and none like you shall rise after you. I also give you that which you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare to you in all your days. And if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And when he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and offered a burnt offerings and peace offerings, and made a feast for all his servants. So, whereas Job lost everything, Solomon gains everything. Solomon gains an understanding heart that he asked for, but God said, because you've asked for this and not wealth and not the lives of your enemies, I'm going to give you all that too. We see after that that the wealth and the riches of Solomon is legendary even to this day. We're not going to jump over and read all of it, but there are several places where Solomon's wealth is talked about. In 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 20 through 28, it talks about all of his servants, all of his soldiers, all of the horses, the stalls that the horses are in, all the people that keep them, just a lot of stuff there. Then again, in 1 Kings chapter 10 and 14 through 29, we're given an account, and it's mirrored in 2 Chronicles 9, 13 through 28. And again, I'm not going to read it all because it's very long, but it takes a lot of words to tell everything Solomon had. It talks about all the great riches Solomon had, and because of that, all the riches that the nation of Israel had. What amazes me the most in it is it talks about silver was counted as nothing in Jerusalem. And then later on in the reading it says Solomon made silver like stones on the ground. Now I'm going to give you an example here that may get that a little closer to home for us. If you're walking down the sidewalk and there's a dirty old penny laying there, are you going to stop and pick it up? Most of us probably won't right now, right? It's not worth the trouble. It's filthy. It's dirty. I don't know where it's been. And you know what? It's just a penny. I can't buy nothing with that anymore. All right, what if you walk by and there's a dollar laying on the ground? You going to stop and pick that up? What about $5? $10, $20? $100 bill laying on the ground. Is that worth the effort? Well, think about a hunk of silver. Now, I'm not a man who knows the value of jewelry or precious metals, but I do know silver is expensive. I can't imagine walking by a hunk of silver there just for the taking and saying, you know what, it ain't even worth the effort to reach down and pick it up. That hunk of silver was like that old dirty penny we talked about a while ago. It's not even worth it. That's rich. And that's how all the nation of Israel was, let alone Solomon, who was the ruler and the most wealthy man of the nation. He had so much. And again, I encourage you in your time to go read those accounts and just see what all is told that he has. So knowing that, I want to ask now, what were these two men's views of God? What were these two men's views of the importance of serving God and of pursuing the kingdom of heaven? Now, I will make the caveat that for the rest of the sermon here, I'm working under the notion that Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon. I know that's never explicitly said, and that's under a little bit of debate sometimes, but for the rest of the sermon here, we're going to make that assumption. We're going to read the words of Ecclesiastes as Solomon, as the writer. But first, we're going to go back and look at Job. So if we go back to the book of Job, chapter 27, we get a little bit of insight into Job's mind and heart after these things that have happened to him have happened. In the first six verses of chapter 27 says, Job again took up his discourse and said, as God lives who has taken away my right, and the Almighty who has made my soul bitter, as long as that my breath is in me and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak falsehood and my tongue will not utter deceit. Far be it from me to say that you are right. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. I will hold fast my righteousness and will not let it go. My heart does not reproach me for any of my days. So Job says here, I will not let go of my righteousness. I will not let go of all that, all those things that I have held tight to my entire life just because God has taken things away. Because if you remember, some of Job's friends here, and even his wife, are telling him, look, God has cursed you. God has put all this stuff upon you. Curse God and die. I think I did fail to mention earlier to read over the part where after Satan took away all of Job's possessions, God did allow him to touch Job's person. Said he had great boils come upon him. His health was afflicted. He sat in ashes and scraped his skin with a broken pot because of the sores and the rashes that were on him. So even through all this, losing his possessions, losing his family, losing his children, losing his health, and being encouraged by those around him to curse God and die, or at the very least to find out what sin he's committed to God to make all these things happen. And Job says, no. I will not put my righteousness aside from me. I will not utter deceit about the Lord my God. The rest of chapter 27 and even chapter 28 continue this thought. But I want to go to the end of chapter 28. The end of chapter 28, it says, and he said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. So even through all this trial, even through all these things, he holds to the fact that wisdom is fearing God. Turn with me now to Ecclesiastes. Pretty well the entire book of Ecclesiastes is the writer talking about what's important in life. Beginning at the very start, chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What a way to start a book. Everything's vanity. The wisest man that has ever walked this earth says all of physical life is nothing but vanity. Well, why is that? Well, that's because if we read through the rest of the book, and we read through the rest of what Solomon has to say, he understands what is not vanity. He understands what is important. Let's go to chapter 2. Read the first 11 verses. And I said to my heart, or I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure, enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with all my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guided me with wisdom. And now to lay hold on folly, till I might see what is good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves who had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who have been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines in the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all is vanity in striving after wind. And there's nothing to be gained under the sun. So Solomon says here, I went after anything I could to make me happy. I had the means, I had the ability, I had the resources to take whatever I wanted. Whatever my eyes were set on, that's what I went and got. and it's all vanity. There's nothing in it that matters. We know Solomon says later on in Ecclesiastes, this is the whole duty of man, to fear God and keep His commandments. That sounds a lot like what Job said, doesn't it? The beginning of understanding is the fear of God. Now we've looked at two men here that came to the same conclusion. And both of them got there from vastly different starting points. I don't know where each one of you are this morning, physically. I don't know what you've got, what you don't have. Some things I can look at and see you've got, but I don't know what your riches are. I do know we're blessed to live in an area where most of us have plenty. Some of us have quite a lot. But what I do know is that no matter where you fall this morning, you're somewhere between Job and Solomon. You've not lost everything. But you've not been given the great riches of Solomon either. You're somewhere in that realm. So I think it's safe to say that if these two men at the far end of those spectrums came to the same conclusion, that this life on earth doesn't matter. The possessions of earth don't matter. What matters is fearing God. Well, surely then all of us who are somewhere between those can take the same thought, take the same point, and come to the same conclusion. It amazes me that when you think about it, that's two entire books of the Bible, between Job and Ecclesiastes, that are written for us to see this point, that life doesn't matter. So why is that? Well, it's because Satan tempts us with physical things. That's what we can feel in front of us right now. That's what's at the forefront of our mind. And if we don't have the discipline to look forward to spiritual things, if we don't have the discipline and the training and the strength to look past what's right in front of us, all we're going to see is what Satan puts in front of us. Now, if you listen to a lot of televangelists, a lot of especially denominational preachers, you'll hear a wide spectrum of things. Some of them preach health and wealth. Just give your life over to God and He's going to take care of you and He's going to give you everything you need and everything you want. And, you know, He's going to bless you with all these riches. Some of them preach right the opposite. Now look, as soon as you obey God, it's going to be tough and it's just going to be terrible and there's going to be all these awful things coming at you. But, well, again, the truth is somewhere in the middle. God is going to bless us. God is also going to allow us to befall things that are unpleasant. And we see examples of that in what we've looked at this morning. But the important thing is we remember what matters. We don't look at the vanities of earth. We look forward to heaven. We look forward to the joys of being with our Father. And once we get there, this earth, this life won't matter to us at all. So now let's look at an important thought here. What does Christ say about all this? So I've looked at some Old Testament examples. Well, now let's see what Christ had to say. Well, again, I'm not going to turn here for the sake of time, but there's several parables. We'll talk about a couple of them that Christ taught. One of them is the parable of the lost treasure that was found. So, paraphrasing this story, there's a man who's going through a field and stumbles upon a lost treasure that was buried and found. Well, he realizes the value of this treasure, so what he does is he goes and he sells everything he has and he makes great effort to be able to buy this field that contains this treasure. And he does that. He understands that the treasure was valuable enough that it warranted getting rid of everything else just for his chance to have that treasure. that thought is mirrored in the parable of the pearl of the great price, where the woman finds a pearl at the merchant. And when she sees it and sees how valuable it is and how awesome it is, how beautiful it is, she does the same thing. She goes and sells everything she's got just so she can have that pearl. Christ says, so is the kingdom of heaven. If we look, if we understand how great the kingdom of heaven is, if we understand how amazing it will be to be in the presence of God, we'll have no trouble enduring whatever this life throws at us, forsaking everything else in life to get to that point. We understand the end game. Again, we've talked this morning about, Brother Randall talked even during his Lord's Supper talk about how blessed we are. We had a prayer offered up for the blessings of life as we purposed in our hearts to give back part of that to God. We are blessed. We've got a lot. How tough would it be to lose all that? It'd be tough. Again, I've lost things. Some things have been more important to me than others. And I've been known to get a bad attitude when I lost things. Job saw the point. Job saw what mattered. Job understood that it was a trial he had to go through, not a punishment from God. And I think sometimes we forget that. When things happen to us, we just start saying, oh, why is this happening to me? Oh, why is this happening to me? I've been being good. Why is this happening to me? Well, that's got nothing to do with it. In James, we're told to count it a joy when we fall into various trials. For enduring those trials tests our faith and produces patience and a whole bunch of other stuff. We've got to be tested to grow. Another thought is Job is put there now as an example for us. If Job's life served no other purpose other than to teach us and help us get to heaven, then his trial was worth it. We need to look at our life the same way. Whatever you're going through right now, somebody is watching you. I don't know who it is. I don't know how many people it is. But whatever you're going through in life right now, somebody is watching you. And if your life serves no other purpose other than to help that person that's watching you understand the glory of God and get to heaven, then it's worth whatever you've endured. Assuming you don't lose your own soul as well along the way. On the flip side of that, we'll summarize Solomon once again. He gained everything. I've never gained everything. I've never had so much money that I just didn't know what to do with it, and whatever I could set my eyes on, I could go get it. Now, that's not to say I'm doing bad. The Lord has blessed me. I never found myself in need. I've always had the things I've had to have. But I've never been able to just drive by a car lot and say, you know what, I want that brand new truck. You know what, there's a great big old hunk of land for sale over here. I'm just going to go get it. All these other possessions I may want, I may enjoy, I've never been able to just go get all of it. I can get some things. I can derive joy from the things I've got, but I've never been able to say as Solomon did, whatever my eyes set upon them to obtain, I went and got it. Solomon did, and Solomon still came to this conclusion. It doesn't matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. So this morning, that's the challenge to you. That's the challenge to me. Whatever you do in life, fear God and keep his commandments. That's the whole duty of man. As Job said, the wisdom of God, or the start of wisdom, is to fear God. Do you fear God this morning? Do you have a desire to get past the things of this earth and get to the things heavenly? I hope you do. If this morning you need to be baptized into Christ, you need to obey the gospel and come be washed in the blood of Christ to have your sins removed, by all means, we want you to do that right now. If you've done that and let the cares of the world get between you and God, if you've worried about things taken away or pursued things put in front of you, and let God go aside, and by all means, let's make that right this morning as well. If you're subject to the invitation, please come while we stand and sing to encourage you.